At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in, because the Kings are in session. Today is Wednesday, September 2nd. This is episode 250. I'm Gino, joined by Kevin and Darren. Catch us wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages. Tonight, we go around the world of sports. September is here, guys. Baseball winds down. College football starts up. NFL 1 week away. Let's get it started. We'll start talking a little baseball. Yankees at 79-60 before today. 4.5 games out of first behind Tampa. 6-4 in their last 10. 8.5 game lead in the wild card. Judge looks like about 7 to 10 days away from the last I heard. Darren, any comments?
I mean, listen, the fact that Judge might be coming back, which we weren't sure about until, 3 days ago, is somewhat exciting. Max Fried coming back as quickly as he did was, I know he went, 3 2/3 in the first start out, but I don't care. I mean, just to get him back and know he's part of the rotation going forward, I thought was a real, real boost. I mean, Schlittler and Cole look fantastic still. I mean, you know, you like where the team is right now in that respect. Again, you know, I mean, they took 3 out of 4 from the Red Sox, and they took over the tiebreaker, which means that if they tie, the Yankees will get the home series. They won't have to go to Boston at all. Again, but they have about a 4-game lead or a 3-game lead on the thing on the Red Sox right now. It's either 3 or 4. I get confused, but you know, it was a good series for them. They actually got the hitting shoes on a little bit. You know, McMahon is back. Not that that's the most exciting thing, but it does shore up the defense a little bit. Now we got to see Lombard is got himself banged up, but not worthy of the IL. So he's still hanging around, and hopefully he can play because he's been a difference maker. Grisham's in one of those slumps again. He just hasn't been able to kind of get it going. A guy that was very clutch last year for the Yankees. And both Gino and I were both like, the worst thing that could happen to this team is that they have to re-sign Grisham, and they re-sign Grisham. And, you know, right now, I mean, again, great glove, all that stuff, but right now he's an automatic out in the lineup, which makes you a little bit frustrated, especially if McMahon's going to play too, and whoever's catching, you know, you have multiple outs in the lineup right now. But Judge coming back is the key to this team, and minimizing the bullpen and trying to get 7 innings out of the starters as much as you possibly can. That's really what it comes down to, because Blackburn is the leverage guy right now, and it scares the heck out. And he's been really good, and I've been picking on him all year, and I'm going to continue to pick on him because he's just not that good a pitcher career-wise. But he's been the guy they can count on outside of Bednar in this pen, and that should scare the heck out of any Yankee fan. Jake?
And listen, Ramos, who's been horrible and is still horrible, had the one big home run.
Yep. And so Garcia's been good. Garcia's actually hitting. So, I mean,
Garcia's been really good. Listen, Jones has played really well, you know, for what it's worth. You know, listen, Wells has looked decent back there. He looks like he's hit a little bit. You know,
he's in the 16-run game. You know,
I was hoping that maybe two home runs in the ninth inning would actually get him going. Maybe I know one of them is off the pitcher, off the position player, I should say. But you know, you're hoping that two home runs in the same inning might get him going, and he followed up with 0-for-3, unfortunately. But you know, you want to see him, you know, just be, my goodness, if he can be 220 in the playoffs with a couple of home runs, you'd take that, wouldn't you?
Oh, look, I thought that about 3 weeks ago. I said the Buck 90 fan club, the Tim Loudner thing, when he did it for the Twins in 87. I mean, that's kind of what you're looking for, is a guy that can kind of turn it on and just get a couple of clutch hits. You know, his bat is decent and has been career-wise. Just this year, he can't get out of his own way. You know, Ali Sanchez is not the answer offensively. Had a nice pass ball the other night, too, and it didn't help the cause. But, you know, the long way to go in the season. You want to get into the tournament. They're putting themselves in great position to get into the tournament, helped by the fact that the American League couldn't be more mediocre, where you have a team like Toronto, who's three games under 500 coming in. That's 2.5 out of the wild card. You know, and they won tonight. They cease through a gem tonight. But
did you appreciate the bullpen help they brought in off waivers? John Schreiber.
Yeah, the Schreiber, they brought in Fulmer. I mean, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, they're just I'm surprised they don't go to the Long Island Ducks and try to get a couple of guys. I mean, they don't there's nobody out there as you said all year, you know, everybody's bullpen stinks. Even the good bullpens are blowing games now a little bit. The Mets are becoming one of the more effective bullpens in baseball right now if you really kind of watch them from the beginning. Yeah. They're actually doing the job, but there's a lot of things to be nervous about. But again, you want to get into the tournament, you want to see what you can do, and you want to see how teams like Tampa Bay hold up. You want to see how, you know, I mean, listen, how the White Sox hold up. These are teams that haven't had the success in the playoffs or been in the playoffs in a long time, and that's kind of what you're going up against. I mean, even in the West, Houston, it's not your typical Houston team if they hold on to the lead. And if Texas overtakes them, Texas was garbage last year. I mean, so it's like, you know, Seattle, who I thought was going to be competitive, really hasn't been. The American League has been below mediocre. I mean, the National League's been solid. The American League, not so much. The National League playoffs are shaping up to look really, really good. The American League playoffs are shaping up not to look really, really good. Oh. The Yankees-Red Sox 4-5 matchup. I mean, that's the one that people are looking forward to, unless the Yankees can find a way to catch Tampa. They have the games against them. They're just going to have to figure out how to do it.
Listen, the big
Mets
surprise.
Can take 2 out of 3 for them, like in the Yankees.
No
the
doubt.
The big surprise with the AL wild card right now is Baltimore has put themselves back in the race here. They're only one game out behind Cleveland here.
And the funny thing is that Alonso's been a big part of it. He's been outstanding. I'm not trying to pour salt, Kevin, because no, you wanted him to stay. You wanted him to stay. So it's not meant as anything toward you. But Alonso has been a key cog. I mean, they traded Rutschman at the deadline. Baltimore basically kind of said, we're out. And here they are. You know what I mean? That's what it was. Cleveland, the only team that's in that race right now that bought. And they have the lead right now. So maybe they do. Maybe they even catch the White Sox. You never know. But everybody else sold. And now, you know, you're sitting there saying, you know, it's anybody's matchup here. It's the American League's going to be, you know, again, mediocrity. National League, though, Gino, you're staring at that Cubs-Phillies matchup. And I don't know. If you're a baseball fan, you're not excited to watch those two teams play each other in the playoffs? I mean, I will be glued to that series. Rooting for the Cubs. But I will be glued to that series.
Yeah. And the last wild card right now, Arizona's a half a game up on San Diego.
Yep. Padres is 2 out of 3 in Cincinnati.
Miami is basically 3 out of the last wild card. St. Louis 4 out. That seems to be about where the barrier is. And then after that, it's 5.5 and more. So it's right about that. But it seems like Arizona and San Diego are fighting that for that last wild card.
And the most interesting story in that whole little race there has been Marte, Ketel Marte, and all the drama that he caused by. Then he left. He didn't show up in Boston, and then he said he was hurt, and then they put him on the IL, and then he got booed at home by the fans. And there's a lot of, you know, a lot we don't know about what happened here. A lot of like misinformation we're getting. But Ketel Marte, I'll be stunned if he's on this team next year, the way the home crowd's treating him and the way his teammates treated him. A lot of his teammates were making a lot of comments about he's not here, he didn't join us, he wasn't part of us type of thing. Those are the kind of things that don't get mended easy. And this is a guy that, you know, listen, I thought that he'd be a good fit for the Mets last year. I thought he could even be a good fit for the Yankees last year. And right now he seems like he's a bit of a mess. And then he came off the IL and he was at a casino instead of going to the game. And, you know, there's a lot of baggage with this guy. But, you know, right now Arizona's got the last spot. So, you know, we're going to find out. We're going to see what happens there.
Two interesting stats I just want to throw at you.
Yeah.
Right now, leading the major leagues in RBIs is Sal Stewart with 105. I don't know if anybody had Sal Stewart on their big O card. And leading the league in saves is Tampa Bay closer Brian Baker. Two guys I don't think anybody had on their big O card.
I don't know if you guys caught any of the San Diego-Tampa series. Tampa swept the Padres. Padres had the win in the game three. They hit the fly ball to deep left. Hit Samad Taylor's glove, goes over the fence for the tying home run, and they lose in extras. That's how close some of these games can become. Just like an error or a misplay like that can turn an entire deal around. And you know, Tampa, who, let's be honest, I mean, everybody made all these moves, and you're sitting there saying, well, Tampa's got Caminero, and that was it, really. And all of a sudden, I mean, and they've been great all season. They've been unbelievable. While Toronto, the defending team that was one game away from winning the World Series, is still fighting to get the 500. You know, Boston got off to the brutal start. Now they've played themselves into the playoff run, and you know, Baltimore's been up and down, like a yo-yo a little bit. It's American League East has been the only exciting part of the American League the entire season, to be honest with you.
But you know, Baltimore made that key addition, too, a couple of days ago, Lewis Robert.
Yep.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. You know, the Mets have been playing pretty good ball, though, Kev.
You know, last 12, they've been playing four first-place teams, the White Sox, the Brewers, Houston, and Tampa. They went 5-7. So not too bad, you know, all things considered. Bench is still having just a terrific all-around performance. I mean, they put up a stat watching the Mets game tonight. Last 31 games, he's got 40 hits, which is more than anybody else in the National League in that time frame. So he's producing. McClain still looks terrific. He's got four or five starts left. You know, unfortunately, you see, like, Stewart leads the league in RBIs as Rookie of the Year. Weatherholt with a great defense, even though the offense has been tailing off every month. You know, it's a very interesting four-player Rookie of the Year race. And unfortunately, the Mets are probably going to be third and fourth.
But you know what? There's stuff to like about what you're seeing from the young guys on the Mets, though. There really is.
Yep. Two of the young guys. Dylan Ross made his debut last night.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, 25, he had a terrific year. Walked through the issue. This year, not so good in AAA. He finally got a chance to pitch in the game. He made his debut on his birthday. Just because of the names, the only other two Mets to make their Major League debut on their birthday, Wilmer Flores and the great John Pasella.
The hat falling off every time he threw a pitch.
Every time he threw a pitch. There went the hat.
You got to understand how bad those Met teams were. Remember, they called them the Flushing Flash Ed Glynn. I think he topped off at 89, but they acted like he threw really hard. You know, he was the lefty, and Pasella with the hat falling off on every freaking pitch. This was the Mets before the Hernandez deal, before the Carter deal, before they kind of put themselves into contention. This is when people were like, what is Cashin doing? Well, he figured it out.
Yep. And Nick Morabito, who came up with the September 1st, he got his first two hits tonight. Great defensive play out there. His first hit was a bases-clearing double. Two other Mets in their first hit had three RBI hits.
Okay.
Max Conforto.
Okay.
Frank Tanana.
The great Frank Tanana.
His first major league hit was a three-run hit pitching for the Mets because, of course, American League, if you remember, and DH. So those were two interesting things just to bring up John Pasella and Frank Tanana tonight.
I always remember Tanana with the 14 straight complete games. That's what I always think of when I think of Frank Tanana, and then his arm just fell apart.
Yep.
Okay. Any other baseball points?
Yeah, I've got two of them.
Go for
it. Interesting one about the CBA. So we know the CBA is up 12-1. Everybody's talking lockout for next year. Minor league CBA, even though they're part of this, even though they're sort of the same union, the minor league CBA does not expire until December 1st, 2027. So if there is a lockout next year, it will only affect the majors. The minors will still be in action.
Okay.
So we do have baseball. We still have a chance to watch the young guys in the organizations. Anybody who's not on the 40-man roster is eligible to play if there is a lockout. So some good news that we may have some baseball to watch.
So, Kev, are we looking at fantasy minor league baseball next year?
I think we are looking at fantasy minor league baseball. Minor league
to kick off the season?
I think so.
It'll be me, you, Gino, and maybe one other in our league, maybe Shag. I think that'll end it with the minor league guys that'll actually be willing to draft it.
Yep. Wow, that's an interesting hole. Wow. Okay.
Yep. And the other big baseball news, the Angels were sold to, or the controlling interest of the Angels were sold to Stan Kroenke and his group for a record $4 billion valuation. Set the record, broke the Padres one from last year, from earlier this year, I should say, Darren.
So he bought the team for $150 million, sold it for $4 billion. And, you know, it's really a little bit of an indictment against the salary cap of how much money these guys are making. All it took was 13 straight losing seasons, and Artie was able to sell. These teams are getting sold at record rates, at record costs and stuff like that, no matter what the value of the team is or what the winning percentage of the team is. Remember watching like a movie like Slapshot. No one's going to buy a fifth-place team, you know. And now, you know, you sit there, and the Angels haven't had a winning season in forever. And, you know, Artie Moreno just made a cool $3.85 billion. And there you go.
Now, if you're an Angels fan, you like the move because you look at Kroenke. He owns the NFL Rams. Well, they won in 22. He owns the NHL Avalanche. They won in 22. The NBA, he owns the Nuggets, 23. MLS, he owns the Colorado Rapids. Sorry, they haven't won yet. But Premier League, he owns Arsenal, who just won the Premier League title last year.
Wow.
So I had no idea he owned the Rapids. The other ones, I didn't know that one.
So, obviously, this guy knows what he's doing, putting together a management team, putting the right people in place. And if you're an Angels fan, after dealing with Artie Moreno for the last 17 years or whatever it was, this is a huge party for them.
It is. It is.
Wow. Any other baseball notes?
You know, no, I think it's really up to a couple of gems from you, right?
Yeah.
So last Thursday, Braves beat the Dodgers 1-0. The only run of the game was a leadoff home run by Drake Baldwin, the Braves catcher. 33rd time a major leaguer has, in the modern era, a leadoff home run was the only run in a 1-0 game. First time ever was the catcher doing it.
Makes sense.
That same game, Chris Sale basically came in the dugout after the eighth inning and said, "This is my game. I'm going out there. I'm pitching the complete game." And he went out there and did it. 5-hitter, 10 Ks, no walks. Oldest guy to do that since some guy named Randy Johnson threw a perfect game in 2004. This was his 28th start with 10 strikeouts more and 0 runs. Tied with Max Scherzer for 5th.
Wow.
4 guys ahead of them. Just rattle off some names that you might think might be 4 guys who have more games with 10 strikeouts and 0 runs.
Nolan?
Well, Nolan's run.
Okay. Pedro?
Pedro's 2.
Did Maddox do it?
Nope.
All right.
Come on, Darren. It's got to be your guy, Darren.
Randy's three.
One more.
Well, you think it's Gibson?
No, it's not Gibson. Sorry.
It's not Sandy.
More recent.
More recent than that. So 10 strikeouts, no runs. Is it like a Gooden type of guy, or is it more recent than that?
Yankee Red Sox pitcher?
Houston. Yankees and Red Sox and Houston pitcher. Why am I blanking on this?
Clemens.
A Yankee Red Sox. Where am I? I was not in the Clemens phrase, but there you go.
Me neither. Okay.
So, mentioned Scherzer. Well, he says, hold my coffee here or hold my beer. He goes out there Sunday, throws 7 innings, 1 hit, no runs, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts. His 115th 10-strikeout game, only 2 guys ahead of him, Ryan and Randy.
That one I think I would have guessed the 2 of them. I think I would have had that one in order.
And 42 years and a couple of days old, 10 Ks, 1 or no hits in the same game. First guy since Nolan Ryan's no-hitter in 91 to be that old.
Wow.
So the question is, and they both had great careers, Sale and Scherzer.
Yep.
They both got hurt a lot. Can you imagine what the stats would have been if these guys would have been able to stay healthy? They both had seasons where, you know, where things just didn't go right for them. I know, I guess it's the common thing with pitching now, but back in the day, it looked like pitchers just lasted a little bit longer. They didn't have the injuries like they do today. But, yeah, I mean, these guys got hurt a lot earlier in their careers, and they're still just dominant to watch. In a big game, you take either one of them in any spot and feel very comfortable.
No doubt. I mean, come on.
Yeah, just really good. Just great, actually. Great pitchers. When you watch these guys, you feel both Hall of Fame. We watch the Hall of Fame now, we feel like it's the Hall of the Very Good. These guys are Hall of Famers.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
And just to go back, you know, talking about the old guys, here are a couple of young guys. The Mariners, Lazaro Montez. The Nationals, Yohandy Morales. Made the major league debuts with the rosters expanding. Both hit home runs their first at bat. They were the 14th and 15th rookies with home runs in their major league debut this year. That's a new record.
Okay.
So definitely a lot of young players coming up and doing well right off the bat.
Listen, it's exciting stuff, man. I mean, listen, baseball's it's been a good season in a lot of ways. I mean, for the Mets, it hasn't been what we had hoped. The Yankees behind the Rays, it's been, you know, but it's still been, we've seen some really good young talent come up. So that's fun to say.
All right. That's all I have.
We're going to move over to some college football. Darren, you want to start us off?
Week 0. Stupidest freaking thing in the world. They made it where it won't be a week 0 next year, by the way. It's going to be a long extended week 1. Stop. So listen, the season kicks off in Ireland. A little rain.
Yep.
TCU, North Carolina. I thought TCU was going to win this game. I was wrong. North Carolina, defensively, after TCU scored 10 points in the first 2 possessions, really held them down, Kev. I mean, any thoughts on this one in particular?
Great, great, great job for Belichick's team there, especially the defense. I mean, they played terrific all year, had the safety in there as well.
I think that was the key to the game, actually. It made a 10-10 game. 12-10, and then all of a sudden it just, you know, it seemed like TCU was chasing touchdowns instead of field goals at that point.
Yep. And, you know, terrific start for Belichick, just when you needed. Because 0-1, and, you know, looking ahead, you listen to Feinbaum and some of these other guys, he'll be gone by October. He'll be gone before Halloween. So this might quiet some of the critics there, at least for a couple of weeks.
A couple of quick points on this one. I agree with you. 11 penalties against TCU to 3 for North Carolina. North Carolina wins the game. They go 1-for-1 on fourth down. TCU 1-for-5, including getting stopped deep in Tar Heelville twice in the last 2 drives. And you start saying to yourself, and listen, there's no guarantee it happens, but nothing wrong with a field goal.
No.
When you're down 15-10. You can kick a field goal and go 15-13. Then you can kick another one and win and take the lead 16-15. Doesn't mean you're going to win. Doesn't mean North Carolina doesn't come right down the field. Billy Edwards was serviceable the other day, better than he looked at Wisconsin anyway. He could have led them down the field to go and win the game 18-16, fine. But Carolina had missed their last field goal of the game. I just don't understand the – I don't know. I too much with the analytics. Sometimes just score the points. Especially in a defensive game you're playing like that. Score the points. It was a pretty even game all around. I thought Carolina a little better in the first half. I thought TCU had the drives in the fourth quarter, just couldn't punch them in. I think Carolina was trying to play defense more and not really pushing the offense in the second half. But congrats to Belichick. Congrats to North Carolina.
Yep. Now their state mate there didn't do as well. First conference game, I believe, of the season.
Yes, it was.
Virginia 34, NC State 8. Just dominant performance by Virginia, right?
Yeah, I mean, so here's what's right and wrong with college football right now. Virginia's offensive line. You have 2 7th-year seniors, 2 6th-year seniors, and the new kid, the 5th-year senior. I mean, these kids are in their mid-20s playing offensive line in college. And C.J. Bailey was pedestrian at best. He threw less than 50%. He threw for Bailey 100 yards. If you could put the sacks in, it was under 100. Yeah, I mean, it was 100 and something. Then with the sacks, it comes out to 84 or something like that. Yeah, it's like
– Zach was a backup quarterback in there.
Yeah, oh, it was just a bad game all around. They actually – they cut it to 17-8. And they were and they got a turnover, and then they forced a turnover, got it back, Virginia, and they kind of ran down their throats. Virginia used a four-man running attack, and the O-line just dominated that game. The other conference game that was gone this weekend was Sac State against Eastern Michigan. I know you were glued, Kev. Sac State's welcome to the MAC because, you know, when I think of the Mid-American Conference, I think of Sacramento State Hornets. They were welcomed on, you know, they got blown out by Eastern Michigan in that one a little bit. Another one that was interesting, by the way, was UNLV losing at home to Memphis. Dan Mullen's team had been, I don't know, a team I thought was a real favorite, a real shot of being that 12th seed.
Yep.
And blew the lead twice in that game. And, you know, Memphis scored the last 13 points of the game to win that one. You know, first time out of the gate for their new coach that was able to get it done. You know, overall, you know, not a lot of games to talk about. Stanford against Hawaii, and you know, USC had a great game, 25 for 29 for 286, I think 296, I think, and two scores ran for another. But there wasn't a ton of games out there.
North Dakota State 33, Jacksonville State 7, their first win as a FBS team.
Yep. That game was 10-7. Late in the half, they take a sack. Then they throw a bomb. The safety misreads it. North Dakota State catches it for a 46-yard touchdown, 17-7, off to the races.
Louisiana Christian of the NAIA Conference beat FCS school Northwestern State 42-37. First time in history an NAIA team beat a Division I school.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a couple of them, the FCSs go down.
Yep. And the tragedy from the weekend
was
too. William Jewell College, their running back, Micah Joe Barnett, 20 years old, scored a touchdown, and a couple of minutes later is on the sideline and has a, as they described it, a medical emergency and winds up passing away.
The hit he took right before the touchdown, Kev, was pretty jarring. He took a big shot to the head, then he scored the touchdown. He's celebrating. Unfortunately, 20-year-old young man grew up in that area. Game was suspended, obviously, and he expired at the hospital. But, very, very sad. Yep. But college football is back, unfortunately, for that type of scenario. You don't want to see that. But, you know, the big games are here, Gino. We start getting some games this week. Not a full slate but of good games, but we got enough good games to pay attention to, Kev.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to love some of these games. Vatek favored by 55.5 over VMI. Missouri by 54.5 over Arkansas Pine Bluff. BYU, 50-point favorite. Ohio State, 50-point favorite. It's a bunch of 40s. I mean, you have to search hard to find some matchups, but there are some ones out there, Darren, right?
There are. I mean, listen, we know the game of the week, and we're going to touch on that last, but another huge game this week is Louisville at Ole Miss.
Yep.
Now, this is a matchup between two ranked opponents. Ole Miss, as we all remember, coming back, you know, made it to the Final Four, made it to the semifinals last year. You know, this is a, you know, this is a team that you want to see if they're going to, you know, keep going forward with the new coach, or if they were just doing it on hate alone of Lane Kiffin last year. But a lot of key players back, including quarterback Trinidad Chambliss. Kevon Lacy, the running back. I mean, they have a lot of key players there. There's a lot of talent on the Ole Miss team. Louisville kind of starts over a little bit in a different way with Jeff Brohm's squad. They bring in the Ohio State transfer quarterback, Kev.
Yep.
So, I mean, so that's kind of Kleinholz is coming in. So that's going to be the key to their team. This one, is there anything in particular on this one that you find interesting? Or
I think it's just, to me, the second best game on the slate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, they're playing in Nashville. You know, theme this weekend is a couple of games that are in the NFL stadium, since there's no NFL games, so they get their kickoff in Nashville.
Absolutely.
NFL stadium, you got Green Bay, you've got Notre Dame versus Wisconsin up there in Lambeau.
Yep.
Anything you're looking forward to in that one?
Well, listen, we want to see if Wisconsin is going to be able to take a step forward. We know Notre Dame's going to be good. Be stunned if Notre Dame's not a top four seed in the playoff, in my opinion. They're that good. CJ Carr, from everything you're hearing, has already taken the next step against a great Notre Dame defense in practices, but now they get to play somebody with a different color jersey. So now it's going to be a little bit different for them. This game 10 years ago is the game of the weekend, where it's like it's Wisconsin, and it's like, you know, this is a powerhouse. Wisconsin, in the Fickle years here, Luke Fickle years, have fallen on hard times. We need to see if Wisconsin can bounce back. We know what Notre Dame's going to be. The spread here is 20 and a half, last I saw.
Yep.
So we're going to see if Wisconsin can make this a game or not, because this should be a fun rivalry, and right now it doesn't look like it's going to be.
Couple of other ones, you know, just from Dame schools, I think. Georgia Tech, Colorado, neither one really expected to do much, but you've got Georgia Tech trying to rebuild after losing Haynes King. You've got Colorado with Deion Sanders trying to sort of rally the troops again.
Georgia Tech is still finishing the top half of their league. I don't know if Colorado can, but Georgia Tech, this is an important game for Georgia Tech, and it's in Atlanta, so it's a game that they have to find a way to get.
Yep. Baylor and Auburn are playing in, I think, the Georgia Dome.
Yep.
Atlanta. So, again, you know, the interconference matchup between some big four conferences, Baylor and Auburn. Again, I don't think either one is expected to be much higher than mid-pack.
Yeah.
I think it's another big game for both of them to get off to a good start.
To be honest, Auburn, again, like we talked about Wisconsin, Auburn's one of those teams you want to be good in college football. You want the Iron Bowl to mean something. You want Auburn to be an effective SEC team, and they just haven't been. And, you know, I think it's a more important game for Auburn than it is for Baylor. I think it's closer to their home, and I think they got to find a way to win it.
Yep. UCLA at Cal?
These are two coaches that are two brand new coaches, right? So you got the Oregon defensive coordinator coming in to take over at Cal. You got Chesney coming in from James Madison, who led them to the playoff, coming to take over UCLA. You got two good quarterbacks in this matchup. This one should be kind of fun. I mean, again, old men on the East Coast, 10:30 start on a Saturday night means that I might catch a half. But this is one where someone's going to get off to the right start and have a chance at having some success this year, and somebody's not. It's a 2.5-point UCLA spread last I saw. It might be down to 2. I've seen it go back and forth. But Cal's good. I mean, so I wouldn't be surprised if Cal wins this one at home.
Yep. Apple Cup is a rivalry on Saturday, Washington State. I mean, Sunday, I should say, not Saturday.
Yep. Washington State's interesting because they just keep having to turn over their coaches. The coach comes in, does a good job, somebody takes them. And this is the third year in a row now that they're doing that. Listen, the talent's okay at Washington State. Washington has Damon Williams. They have the star in this game. For Washington State to win this game, they have to make Damon Williams beat them from the pocket. If they can't keep Damon Williams in the pocket, they're not going to win it. It's the Apple Cup. Usually it's the end of the season. For them to play week one is a little interesting, but at least they're keeping the game on the schedule. Other programs that have rivalries forever are not. So it's something to keep an eye on.
And the standalone game Monday night, you got SMU and Florida State. SMU ranked, Florida State not, but, you know, Florida State off the win last weekend. Norville needs to keep it going, doesn't he?
Yeah, they were favored by 31 in that game. They won by 14. I mean, yeah. You know, that's New Mexico State, who's been kind of a laughingstock doormat in college football for a while now, outside of 1 or 2 years here and there. You get worried. I mean, Florida State, and I'm blanking on the quarterback's name, I'm sorry. He had a pedestrian kind of game through for like 202 yards and a score or something like that. He's going to have to play much better if they're gonna be competitive against a fired-up squad in SMU. So that'll be interesting.
And that's presently about a field goal for a SMU favorite. So that's a, like I said, SMU is a better team, we think.
No, on paper it should be. We also get we also get Boise State, Oregon. Boise State, one of those teams that could be one of the group of five squads that gets that bid. You don't expect them to win at Oregon, but a couple of years ago, remember, they gave them a scare.
Yep.
They made Oregon beat them by a field goal late. So don't look past Boise State. Quarterback Madsen's been there. I think he's a 6-year senior.
Do you think Boise State keeps that close?
You know what? I do. I think week one, I think they find a way to keep it close. I don't think they'll be intimidated by Oregon. I think that they have veterans. I mean, if one team blows out the other, it's Oregon blowing out Boise State. But the fact is, I don't think it will be. I think that Boise will be somewhat competitive. They have to make Dante Moore a little bit uncomfortable. They have to stop the run with the front seven.
And they gotta run the ball.
I mean, if they can run the ball effectively and make Madsen have a shot to make explosive plays off play action, that's how they stay in the game.
That spread is 24.5.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
I think they can keep it close. Another one that I'm looking at this week, Kev, only because of who these teams are and the proximity, is Western Michigan taking on Michigan. Now, Michigan is Michigan, okay? And it's all about Bryce Underwood, sophomore year, taking the next level. Western Michigan won the MAC last year, and they're the favorite to win it again this year. And we've seen Michigan over the years slip up in a game like this, whether it be Appalachian State, whether it be whoever, where teams have kind of – Central Michigan got them 1 year, where teams catch them early. Now, Michigan has more talent than Western Michigan. I'm not denying that. But this is an interesting matchup. I think that Western Michigan can keep this one close, and that spread's closer to like 27, I think, G.
Okay.
And then the other one that I really am looking forward to, because it's a weird matchup, is James Madison Liberty. This is another one where the two teams are both kind of favorites in their conferences for that group of five bid. This is a lose-a-leave town match week one. In Harrisonburg, at James Madison, on ESPNU, by the way, if you really want to catch it at noon. This is, again, these are two teams. James Madison made the playoff last year. Liberty was not good last year, but they've been competitively good, and they made they were undefeated a couple years back, I was 3 years ago. So the loser of this matchup has no shot of getting into the playoff. The winner keeps the dream alive. So it's just one to look at. I mean, James Madison, 6-point favorite at this point, but they have a lot of turnover. All their guys went to UCLA or stayed in the region but didn't stay at James Madison. So it's going to be interesting to see how we do there. But, yeah, definitely some interesting games.
And the big one, Darren.
Listen, so I'm going to say this with all deference to my friend Kevin. We have Clemson, the Tigers, going to play LSU, the Tigers. Both teams play at Death Valley, but we're going to be playing the one at Baton Rouge. LSU's 10-point favorite. Now, we have two coaches now. My friend Kevin hates Clemson, okay? He's a South Carolina guy. Yep. But if Kevin was not a South Carolina guy, Dabo would be the kind of coach we all like. He's trying to do it old school. Doesn't sit there with all the fancy transfers. Did 12 this year, most he's ever done. You know, meanwhile, Lane Kiffin has 40-plus new players on his roster and is a genuine prick.
And trying to recruit NFL guys, too, I think. He's getting the waiver wire for the 53-man cutdown.
Where the AD from Georgia came out today saying that they should excommunicate LSU from the conference if they play an NFL, former NFL guy. This is where we are in this. Lane Kiffin is not liked. He's a jerk. And listen, and I'm not saying it because I know him personally. I'm saying it because what he did to his kids in Mississippi last year. I'm not saying it for any other reason. But no one's ever had a nice word to say about this guy. No. His father, Monty Kiffin, great guy. Yeah, never heard a nice word. His son, prick. No other word to put, Gino. It's the only word we can do. But LSU is better. Clemson has not been Clemson over the last few years. Vazzini is coming in to play quarterback, you know, from the Princess Bride. He's going to be the guy. Clemson, to win this game for Clemson, they're going to have to really run the ball. I know it sounds cliche. They're going to have to shorten the game, run the ball, and pressure Sam Levitt on defense, which they were not good at last year with the front. They're going to have to force LSU to check down, use the entire field, and hope that Levitt gets bored and tries to make plays against them. It's really hard to see Clemson finding a way to win this game. Their offensive line, I think, combined has 32 starts or 34 starts in their combined. Like we talked about, I think one guy in Virginia has more than that, right? I mean, you know, their entire offensive line is a problem. They had trouble throwing the ball down the field last year, Kev. That was with Klubnik. Now they go to Vazzini. We're going to see what he can do. Just much more talented LSU team, in my opinion, Kev.
Yes, you're right. LSU's got the talent. I think Lane Kiffin's got all the pressure on him.
He certainly does.
Because he knows he's hated. There's a lot going on there. And I think somehow, some way, Dabo gets the boys up. And I think Dabo and Clemson can give LSU a hell of a game. I think this is going to be a lot closer than people think, personally. And I think maybe I'm being clouded because of my hatred of Lane Kiffin even more than Dabo. I mean, so I think... I like Clemson here. I think the continuity, having Vazina there from last year, he did get a start last year when Klubnik was hurt. So I think he's familiar with the system. I think they're going to find a way, and I think they're going to keep this close. I can see the LSU winning by a field goal here, 30-27 type game.
All right, Gino, where are you going in this one?
I think LSU covers. Before all this Lane Kiffin bringing in these NFL guys, before all that started, he did have one of the top-ranked portal classes out there. I think they're better than Clemson. I think it's still a close game, but I think in the end they wind up covering the 10 points. LSU 34-20, I could see. I think they cover. They're home. I think Kiffin winds up figuring out a way. Give me LSU minus the 10. Darren?
I'm going to stick with Kev on this one. I'm going to think Clemson keeps it close. I think Dabo's had all offseason to think about this game and finding a way to keep it close. I think when you have 40 transfers, it does take a little couple weeks to gel. I think that it's a lot of new players trying to fit in. And I think that though LSU has the superior talent, I think Clemson's a little bit of a closer-knit team at this point. I'm going to say Clemson wins the game outright in a stunner. I say Clemson wins this game 27-23. Road win at LSU.
There you go.
So, okay. you have two others that you like this week?
Sure. One of them is one of the ones we mentioned, so... I like Oregon minus the 24.5 against Boise. I think Dan Lanning has the Ducks. He'll come out hot. He's going to avoid the opening day loss. I know a couple years ago it got really close and dicey. I think this time it doesn't. I think Oregon takes control, 42-17 maybe. Give me the Ducks minus the points.
Okay. Want us all to go around second? Okay, Kev, give us your second one.
All right, I'll go SEC here. I'll go Ole Miss. We talked about the game also. I think Ole Miss is just better. And the fact that it's under a touchdown, they've got Trinidad Chambliss back. I think Ole Miss rolls.
Okay. I'm going to go Western Michigan to cover against Michigan, getting 27.5. Listen, I don't think they're going to win the game. I just think it's going to be closer than people think. I could see this game being 34-20, Michigan scoring a couple touchdowns late in the fourth quarter to kind of put it away, or even 34-17. But I think that they're going to, I think Western Michigan's going to cover this game. Gino, your third one?
Last one. I'm taking Miami minus a 23.5 at Stanford. I think Miami pulls away in the second half. I think it goes from being a 10, 15, 17-point game to a blowout. Give me Miami big time. I don't know, 41-10, 41-13. I'm all over Miami in this one. Give me Miami big time.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's good that they're this early, because I'd hate to make that trip in like mid-October in the middle of the season. Then I think it would be more a closer game that way. But, yeah, I like that one. I was torn between the two Heisman favorites, at least according to the odds. C.J. Carter, Notre Dame, Arch Manning in Texas. Texas favored by 29.5 at Texas versus Texas State. But I'm going to stick with the Irish at Lambeau. 20.5?
Yep.
So it's under 3 touchdowns. I think Notre Dame wins this one, and C.J. Carr gets started on his Heisman Trophy campaign here.
And my third one, I'm going to take James Madison to beat Liberty in that lose-or-leave-town match. I think James Madison finds a way to win it by 10. Listen, again, James Madison's a favorite and, like, nobody's back. It's one of those things that's interesting in that league that they do have. So they have a really they're solid defensive ends back, and they've got enough players. I think Liberty's coming off a tough season. I think the game will be competitive for about 3.5 quarters. I think that James Madison finds a way to win by 10, and I'll take JMU as our third and my third and final pick. We'll be making our 3 picks every week. We'll be highlighting a feature game every week, and college football here, ready to go. And as we get into mid and late September, we'll start seeing all the conference matchups, and it gets really fun.
Yep.
All right. From there, we are going to move on to Darren. You got some buried treasures for us?
Yeah, just a couple things. I'm going to start with an NFL point real quick. You know, everybody says what if, right, about their team, about the draft and who they just missed out. I'm just going to give you the Raiders for an example. In 2002, the Raiders selected Napoleon Harris. The very next pick was Ed Reed. In 2004, the Raiders selected Robert Gallery. The very next pick was Larry Fitzgerald. In 2005, the Raiders selected Fabian Washington. The very next pick, Aaron Rodgers. In 2007, the Raiders selected Jamarcus Russell. The very next pick, Calvin Johnson. How different could the Raiders have looked just with one extra pick, just by taking the guy that went after him?
Wow.
Just an interesting story on that. Quick little hockey point for you guys. And, you guys know I'm a big Al MacInnis guy. He was a Flame for many years, won a cup, won my only cup.
Yep. So,
Al MacInnis once fired a slap shot so hard, it went through the goalie's glove, broke his finger, and still ended up in the net. It was like the day before Thanksgiving, 1999, on a Blues power play against Chicago. MacInnis found space, let one go from the right side. Jocelyn Thibeau tried to glove it. The shot punched clean through, broke his ring finger, and still went in. Thibeau missed the next 2 weeks. He used to always win the hardest shot. Remember that when he used to do that?
Always
Al MacInnis.
You used to have to break the plates.
Oh, God, he was so good. He had such a rocket. But I didn't know he broke his freaking ring finger and it scored. And broke the glove. Last one's a baseball story on a guy we all know. Well, know of, anyway. We never saw him play. But Lou Gehrig. Okay. So Lou Gehrig had 17 broken bones he was unaware of until the doctors x-rayed his hands and figured out what his career had done with him. For 14 years, Gehrig didn't miss a single game, not one, from June 25 to April of 39. He played 2,136 consecutive games, like you guys know, named the Iron Horse, untouchable record for 56 years. What nobody knew was that Gehrig himself, he didn't know about it, was his body was falling apart because of the injuries. In 33, a Washington Senators pitcher hit him in the head with a fastball, knocked him unconscious. He stayed in the game. The next season, he suffered a lumbago attack, like lower back pain that was like brutal. So he had to be helped off the field. Then showed up the next day. They listed him as shortstop, gave him one at bat, got a single, pulled him out of the game to keep the streak alive. Then he played through a chip bone in his big toe that doctor said needed a month to heal. That night he had a homer and two doubles and a single, and he broke that. He broke the little finger on his right hand four separate times. Teammate Bill Werber remembered him playing with a broken middle finger on his glove hand, barely able to close it around the bat. He literally hit with part of his hand off the bat. "Don't ask me how," said Werber. None of it showed up in the headlines at the time because Gehrig never let it. He simply absorbed the injury, got patched up quietly, and took the field the next day like nothing happened. It wasn't until x-rays taken late in his career, done for an entirely different reason, that doctors realized what 14 years of silence actually did to him. 17 fractures in his hands healed over completely that had never been treated, rested, or even acknowledged publicly while they were happening. Then in 38, something changed that no amount of grit could fix. His power disappeared. His legs stopped responding the way they always had. On May 2nd, 1939, after grounding out weekly and watching his own teammates congratulate him for merely reaching the ball in time, Gehrig walked into the manager's hotel room and asked to be benched. He didn't want the streak kept alive by a pinch-hitting appearance. He wanted it to be real. Six weeks later, doctors at the Mayo Clinic gave him the answer. Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, a fatal disease with no cure that would later carry his own name. On July 4th, 1939, in front of 62,000 fans, Gehrig stood at home plate, told them he considered himself the luckiest man on the face of the earth, which we know. He never once complained about a broken hand in 14 years. It took a disease with no name to finally stop him. Wow. And that's the backstory on Gehrig. I didn't know all the injuries, but I thought it was interesting. So that is the Iron Horse, and apparently he truly was the real Iron Horse, guys. And that's my last of my my treasures.
Wow. All right. We'll go around the world of sports. I'll hit the NBA right now. So today the NBA released the findings of its year-long investigation into the salary cap circumvention by the LA Clippers and owner Steve Ballmer, Kawhi Leonard, and others for violating salary cap circumvention rules. The punishments they handed down were a 1-year suspension for Ballmer, $30 million fine for the Clippers, 5 forfeited first-round draft picks for the franchise, a $700,000 fine for Leonard. Guys, this is like just craziness.
I mean, all this because they circumvented the salary cap. They gave arranged a $28 million endorsement deal for Kawhi Leonard with a now bankrupt banking company, Aspiration, who were in the middle of what was supposed to be a 23-year, $300 million endorsement deal with the Clippers. So, Obviously, trying to circumvent the cap, they got busted. Between picks they've dealt, they don't have a first-round pick for something like 7 or 8 years.
And the interesting thing about this also is they made the deal for Paul George so the Kawhi would have a running partner. Yep. They traded 3 first-round picks for him, plus Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Just put it all in perspective of all the things they try to do for Kawhi to circumvent the cap, and it ended up where they lost 3 first rounders plus another 5 plus SGA. The Clippers are. They thought it was bad on the Donald Sterling.
amazing that, you know, with all those first rounders, I mean, that hamstrings them from trades because we all know how valuable first rounders are in trades. And, you know, this is a franchise that has a chance to turn into the Charlotte Hornets level of incompetence over the next 7, 8, 9 years.
With the depth of the West, they have no shot of sniffing a playoff bid. I mean, two good teams are going to miss the playoffs in the West. I mean, that's what I mean. It goes 12 deep. They're not going to be anywhere near it. And no one's going to want to sign there. They're not going to have an opportunity to get any better. It's going to be crazy.
And they just opened up that new arena.
Yep.
I mean, they're in a world of trouble, let me tell you.
Absolutely. This was, and it's being appealed, but this was a brutal brutal finding.
Basically, don't mess with the salary cap.
Yeah.
Cut it out.
And the NBA salary cap, if you don't have a PhD, you can't figure it out. So I don't even know how they do it. I mean, every other salary cap you can kind of figure out. The NBA is like, I mean, you need to be advanced physics, finite math. It's like you're doing Goodwill Hunting math to figure out the goddamn salary cap in the NBA. I mean, you're on Goodwill. I mean, you know, Kev can do it, but me and Gino are sitting there saying, yep.
2-8 fringe. Then you start with these mid-level exceptions, trade exceptions. Veteran exceptions, all sorts of sign and trade restriction. I mean,
The
NFL
a lot.
Seems so easy in comparison, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, listen, the fact is that if I wanted to work at my job, I might go sweep the floors at MIT just so I could learn the salary cap and maybe get a job in the NBA. I'm telling you, it's freaking crazy.
All right. Darren, you want to hit on the Travers?
Well, this was a, you know. This was a race of races, right? And the horse that nobody thought was going to win in his third career start, leading change, but Manny Franco, who's had the meat of his life in San Francisco, the year of his life, and Brad Cox, finds a way in his third career start to beat all these great horses. Napoleon Solo finished in second, Golden Tempo, got a little bogged up, finishing third, but really no excuse. It opened up for him. He just couldn't catch leading change, who just took off down the stretch and just outkicked everybody. And this is a horse that, if he runs, this is a horse you can't wait to watch as a four-year-old. He's going to be dynamic. He's 3-for-3. He's lightly raced, and he beat all these great horses, beat the Puma, Emerging Market, Sea Strike, Renegade, Ocelli, Silent Tactic. I mean, this was a field. This was as good a field for the Travers as we've seen in years, Kevin. And this horse that, again, I'm not saying it wasn't the longest shot on the board, but he was close. He dominated. He's 3-for-3 lifetime, hasn't lost yet. And what a kick. I mean, great race. Overall, it was a fun one to watch, Kev. I thought that I didn't see him being able to keep up with the horses that were more seasoned.
No.
But Manny Franco, again, having a great year. Just got it done.
Franco's had, like you said, a Saratoga meet that's just been incredible. I mean, he and Linda Rice have teamed up for I don't know how much.
Absolutely.
They've been great together. Napoleon Solo, I mean, he went out fast. He led, and he fought gamely down the stretch. He did fight real gamely.
He held off Golden Tempo, who was coming. I mean, tell you how good he was. He held off Golden Tempo and the Puma, who were both coming.
Yeah. I mean, he only finished half a length back after leading the whole way. I mean, it was a great effort by Solo, but an even better race by Leading Charge and a Leading Change and Franco.
Yeah, no, I just
it was a fun race to watch if had.
I lost. I'll put it that way. I did not have the winner in this one. I did have him in a couple of exotics, but it wasn't enough to get me through. I didn't have him on top.
Yeah, the exact was $78 for that exact and a dollar.
Yep.
That's a nice payoff on the Travers.
It certainly is. Certainly is. And that was it for horse racing for me. Kev, you wanted to touch a little bit on Scotty?
PGA, Scotty Scheffler. So, Minwoo Lee goes out, shoots like a 62 in the first round, and, you know, 8-under, surges to the lead. He falls back. Victor Hovland, by the end of the third round, had the lead. Scotty's sort of hanging around, 3 strokes back, I think it was. And Scotty goes out there, shoots 66. Hovland blows up to 72. And Scotty winds up winning the Tour Championship, the $10 million prize. So after winning week one, not winning again until the first FedEx playoff tournament, and then winning the Tour Championship, that's now 3 wins for Scotty. Was 5 runners-up, like 10 or 11 top 10s.
Well, here's the bad part, Kev. He didn't have a good year for Scotty Scheffler. Like, it was like he was battling all year. That's how good he is. He would have rounds where, like, he would come on maybe on the fourth round, but struggle to hit putts, struggle to hit fairways, things that we had never seen from Scotty Scheffler before.
Yeah, he missed a cut this year.
He missed a cut. I mean, you're right. And he was still the best golfer in the world, despite despite everything, despite having to battle all year, like we hadn't seen him battle like this in 4 years, and all of a sudden, you know, he still finds a way to win, even though you're thinking someone's going to take it from him, and nobody can.
Yep. So they're age 28, 29, 30 years on the tour. Tiger and Scotty. Listen to these numbers. Tiger 61 starts, Scotty 62. Wins, Tiger 18, Scotty 18. Majors, Tiger 4, Scotty 3. Players, Tiger did not win a player in those years. Scotty got one. So he's got like 3.5 majors, if you want to call it that. But 18 wins for both of them in the same number of starts, 61, 62. I mean, that's how dominant Scotty's been for the last 3 years. He's Tiger Woods level dominant right now.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
It's been incredible watching Scotty play these last couple of years. And this, like you said, Aaron, this was a bad year for him. He still won 3 times.
Yeah.
And was always in the top 10.
You just felt like he never put it all together, yet at the end of the day, he wins it all. Yep. Anything else with golf? No, I think that's it, right?
That's it for golf, yep.
U.S. Open, Kev.
U.S. Open, just real quick. First round, Novak Djokovic was defeated in 5 sets. Not feeling well, throwing up during the match, cramping up during the match. He bounces out in the first round. First time he's ever lost first round of the U.S. Open. First time he lost in the first round of any Grand Slam since 2006. And this is the first time since 2003 that neither Joker, Federer, or Nadal were playing at least in the second round of a Grand Slam. So it's been a long time. Even though Nadal and Federer have been retired for a couple of years now, it's always been the big three. And you just wonder if Joker's got 1 year left as a farewell tour or not.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, again, he's had an amazing career. The thing about it was I watched the early couple sets. He wasn't playing bad. It was more that the Argentinian was playing really well.
He kept extending rallies, making...
I know. I mean, he was making the old man work, and the old man was hitting them over the net, and it was like... But the Argentinian kid just kept finding a way to get back. I thought the kid played really well, and Joker wasn't playing, feeling well, but I didn't think he played poorly. He just got outplayed. He got outplayed. I didn't think he was bad. He just got outplayed.
Yep. So we'll see if Alcaraz can... Is the last big guy standing, or if this opens up for maybe an American? Maybe.
Wouldn't it be nice to see a Ben Shelton or one of our Americans make a run here? Tiafoe, whoever it is. One of these guys have to make a run here. And Tommy Paul, I don't care who it is. Let's get somebody into the final. It'd be nice to see.
We need something other than Andy Ryan. Roddick 2003, right?
Yeah, what everybody's banking on. Then the next year, they put him on the Amex things, and he got knocked out in the first round. Remember? They made this whole big thing. It was like the run of, it was like the Dave and Dan commercials for the Olympics. Remember with the decathlon? Who's better, David? Yeah. Dave didn't even qualify. Dan, opposite way. Dan didn't qualify. Dave finished like sixth. Yep. You know, that was what that was like. Oh, brutal. You guys have anything else?
Let's touch on the NFL.
Sure.
Josh Jacobs, running back for Green Bay, was placed on the commissioner's exempt list after being charged with 2 misdemeanors.
Beat his girlfriend, from what we understand. Some say, we haven't seen the video, some say it was comparative to the Ray Rice incident. If it was that bad, I'd be stunned if he ever played football again. I mean, the biggest news in this, and it sounds so ridiculous, you hope the girl is okay, is that everybody's fantasy boards just got blown up, and now they figure out who the Green Bay running back is now. But this is a guy that the court case isn't going to be till November, and you wouldn't be surprised if they push it to after the season, if they find a way to get him off the commissioner's exempt list, and they keep pushing the court date back so he can play. But hopefully it's not as bad as some of the things I've read.
Yeah. The NFL had all their cuts. Notable Tennessee cut Will Levis. Giants cut Evan O'Neill. Evan Neal, excuse me. No O. Odell Beckham made the roster.
The Jets are looking at Tucker because, you know, sexual deviance isn't a big problem if you don't have a kicker. So you bring him in. Listen, you know, they tried Sanders here in the preseason. They tried Cade York. Nobody can kick a field goal on this team. They let Nick Folk go, you know, because he was horrible. He only has never missed. I don't understand what the Jets are doing on the kicker side of it, unless they're really trying to guarantee a top three spot in the draft by missing kicks. I mean, they could be doing a lot of different things. Overall, you know, when you look at the Jets roster, need some depth on the interior offensive line. They made the deal with the Raiders last week. That'll help a little bit, but they're going to need a little bit more than that probably. You know, you don't know if they have a shutdown corner or not. You don't know if they have the depth at linebacker that they'll need. But overall, when you look at the roster, it's better than it was last year from top to bottom, Kev.
Yep. Like, so we'll see what happens when the season starts here. You know, a couple of the young guys that we were counting on, Sadiq, Pounds, you know, they were hurt. That didn't really get a chance to play much preseason or at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was interesting that they just kept the two quarterbacks. Other teams kept four. Pittsburgh.
The Browns.
Browns, but at least had Gabriel put on IR. But they kept two. I thought, you know, they could have tried to play a game here. They could have maybe brought in Will Levis to be the veteran backup since they played Tennessee week one. That would have been interesting to do, bring him in. But they chose not to do that, or not, at least not yet.
It could still happen. Again, season starts for us next week. You know, the Giants, you know, cutting Neal was, you know, former first-round pick that never worked out. Malik Nabers, will he play? I mean, big question mark for them week one. You know, how effective can Scatterboo be with his style? How long will he last this season? You know, always a bit of a question mark with the Giants. But the Giants with a real coach, and there's some real excitement about them. The Jets, listen, I mean, there's reason for optimism. Not optimism that it's a playoff team, but optimism that it's going to be a more competitive team. You know, Washington, you know, you get your team back. You get Jaden Daniels back. We're going to do an entire NFL preview next week where we're going to delve into all these teams, make our predictions, tell you who's going to be great, who isn't, tell you why. But, yeah, there's going to be a lot of NFL for us to dig into, and we can't wait to talk about it. This is the exciting time of year where the NFL kicks off, baseball starts winding down, the playoffs start happening, college football gets into gear, hockey will be dropping the puck in less than a month, and basketball in less than 2 months. So we got a ton of stuff that's going to be all breaking in the next couple of weeks, but we can't wait to get into the NFL. It's going to be fun for us and for you guys next week.
One interesting thing I heard today, Ryan Paganetti, he's a former analytics guy, coached with Doug Peterson in Philly with the Jaguars, and also spent time with the Raiders. He's hired now as an analyst on ESPN. And they went through opposing field goal kickers in Gillette Stadium were like at 70, low 70%.
Mm-hmm.
Like worst of anybody. They realized that when they were kicking it, the Patriots would put up the reverse camera angle on the big scoreboard that they're kicking into.
The goal.
It sort of gave me that optical illusion of two sets of uprights that the kicker is possibly looking at. And maybe it's just psychological, maybe it's a little impact, but the fact that, you know, if it makes a difference in two kicks out of 100, that could be a win. And only the Patriots can think of doing stuff like this.
The Patriots always found ways. They've always found ways for a competitive advantage, or maybe stretching the rules a little further than they should, and they continue to do so again. Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Yep. So keep an eye out for the Patriots with Vrabel, you know, a Belichick disciple there. So we'll see if the games continue there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to football and talking about the Jets next week for 45 minutes, or until Gino says you guys have done enough talking about the Jets.
Gino will stop us. But we will be ready to talk about
everything. Gino will cut the mic.
Did you say 4 minutes? Excuse me?
45.
Four minutes?
45.
4 or 5 minutes?
Gino will keep the show flowing. I promise all of you guys that. Anything else, guys, before we wrap up?
No, that's it.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports, a wacky world where the Patriots continue to cheat, even when you think it's over. The coach sleeps with a reporter. Doesn't matter. He's still the coach. They put goalposts on the screen. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's the Patriots. They can do whatever they want. Robert Kraft's a god. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. Listen, we're going to be posting a lot more on social. We're going to be getting all of our football stuff up. We're going to be making all of our picks. We're going to be covering college and pro like nobody else. So please listen in. Like our stuff. If you don't like it, pretend you like it. Share it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Overtime, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and two times the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.